Blog Talk Radio.
We're a nation of haters under their control. Rise up everybody and burn down the system, fails the exit pool. Wake up the silence.
Everybody, and welcome to the Star Chamber Show. And tonight we've got a great one for you, leading in there with, of course, Zero King, who will be performing at Imaginarium in September. And love that tune, because tonight we're going to have some good energy. We've got a great guest for you coming up here in a few minutes, Mr. Anderson O'Donnell, who's bringing us the Dystopian Noir Thunder, but he'll be joining us in just a second. But first, of course, we want to chat a little bit. All of us are definitely ready for a lot of stuff that's been going on this spring and just coming off of a pretty crazy weekend. So Alex and I were down with a lot of the rest of the Seven Star Press gang down in Memphis at Mid-South Con, and Michael West was, of course, a force by himself up at Horror Hound. And so guys, how was your weekend? Let's talk about it just a little bit, and then we'll get Crazy Susan involved in this shenanigans here.
Oh, my God, I'm still recovering from it. Friday night, oh, my Lord. It was great. I mean, this was a really great show for Seventh Star Press at Mid-South Con. And, I mean, we broke our record, and we just sold tons and tons and tons of books. And it was just so great to see everyone come in and support the authors that we have. And even for those who were unfamiliar of what a con was, to have someone come up to the table and say, I've never been to a con before, and I'm not seeing where you have books by Stephen King or Anne Rice, but these books really sound good, I'm going to buy them. And then they actually buy them. It's, you know, it just shows that we're producing things that are amazingly just top-notch.
Yeah, it was a good con all around. I mean, even our good friends with the Dark Oak Media Camp, Alan Gilbreth and Kimberly and Michelle and all them, I mean, they said that they also had a record weekend. So, I mean, they were selling like hotcakes as well and reported a really, really strong weekend. So I think the Mid-South Con front, at least, was strong as could be. I mean, all the panels were well attended, even the 9 a.m. panels that I was on, where I didn't think there'd be very many people. They were full rooms, and Christy Bradley and Melissa Royer just put on a great literary track, and just some superb people on all the panels. I mean, it was really cool. And I had so much fun with you guys. I mean, that was great. You know, seeing Kalila's movie, Curse of the Rougarou, and I hope I pronounced
amazing.
That right, but the werewolf movie. And, of course, you know, hanging out with the great Robert Kay, the illustrator on the Southern Haunts anthologies. And, you know, and then he and I, of course, have concocted a possible new project that might have a little bit of a gnome theme, so just stay tuned for that. But, oh, man, it was, yeah, I hated leaving. I always hate the end of the con weekend. I mean,
I'm the same way with it. It's, if we could just do it every day, I would be happy. And while we're on here, I'm sure that the guy who did this is probably working or doing something at this moment. But I would really like to give an extra thanks to the gentleman who came by our table and continuously came back to our table and continuously kept buying books. until he reached about, what was the number, 18, 19 books that he bought off of us?
Total was 19. He bought Traumatized from You and then 18 7-star books. So his first name was Jeremiah. I don't know if he wants me to get his full name on the air, but first name was Jeremiah, and great guy, and a big fun loving guy, and went crazy, and he got a few of your books, Mr. West, so he's one of your supporters too. But we had a blast, and of course, and I'd be remiss not to mention the third amigo. Of course, the three amigos, as I call them, are Alex, Robert Kay, and then Melissa Robinson, who was just awesome at our booth and just was a real big support all weekend. I really was grateful for her being there. So hopefully
do you understand
she'll get a chance
why I
to...
call her? Do you understand why I call her my minion now? She is a wonderful minion.
She was gold. I mean, she was just awesome. But how about let's Michael? You reported a record weekend too. Tell us about Whorehound.
Oh yeah, Whorehound was off the chain. It was just a wild weekend, full of fun and excitement. I had faithful readers flying in from Australia. And, you know, I wasn't the only reason they were there, but I was a reason they were there. It just was pretty surreal to go. The whole week was just, start off with number one bestseller in occult horror, and then to end with a record-setting weekend. Plus, got to meet the entire cast of Evil Dead, Evil Dead 2, and which I've been a fan of, you know, most of my life, then to have the great Christopher Young, whose music has inspired me for many, many years, come over to my table and buy a copy of he bought a copy of Spook House and got a copy of Cinema of Shadows, and it just was very, very cool and very surreal.
That's awesome. Yeah. I'm assuming your crowds were pretty big up at that event too.
Yeah, they sold out on Saturday.
Yeah.
Friday I sold more books on Friday than I do at most cons.
usually a good sign. Usually a good sign.
Right.
Friday's usually an okay day, and then you know. But we had a huge Sunday, which was surprising. But you know, we even had a big Sunday.
Yeah, Sunday. Yeah, I mean Sunday. Usually if I'm not at the table, we don't really sell that many books because everybody wants them signed. But I learned a long time ago that to sign, you know, a few copies of each book to leave on the table in case I do have to walk away. You know, and when I wasn't at the table Sunday morning, we sold 8 books.
Yeah. your executive staff keeps getting better, of course, too.
I have well-trained minions as well, so.
You can't do these things without help, I'm telling you. It's invaluable.
No.
But it was good convention weekend. And Susan, we're going to get ready because when Con Carolina rolls around, you're in for it. We're going to have some good stories after that weekend.
Oh, I'm sure there will be. We've got 2 months to go. It's going to be a packed hotel full of people who have absolutely no idea which way they're going, and all of us. So it probably won't end well for somebody.
Oh, that's going to be a blast. I'm looking forward to that. But actually, tonight is interesting because when we originally booked this show, our guest, Anderson, was not didn't know that he was available yet to come aboard 7-Star Press. So it actually him coming aboard evolved after he had already had the show booked. So this night has taken on an even bigger level with us because today, of course, we publicly announced Anderson O'Donnell with his novel Kingdom and the Tiber City novels as our new author with us. And, of course, to give him a quick introduction, Kirkus Reviews rated Kingdom as one of the top 25 indie books of 2012. And the style that he's known for is kind of a dystopian noir. And so without further ado, we just set his mic to live. Welcome Anderson O'Donnell to the Star Chamber Show.
Hey, guys. Thank you for having me. I'm honored to be here. appreciate it.
There's my man.
I don't know how to follow up all that, all those reports from the conventions. I got nothing on that. Nothing crazy.
Oh, no, you're in trouble because you're going to be joining us for some of these things in the future. So
oh, absolutely.
You're going to have some
I've
stories with us.
You know, travel itineraries and all that good stuff.
Oh, yeah, yeah, you're going to join us for some of this fun. But really, I mean, the conventions are great for us to, you know, come together and just hang out and spend time. And, you know, it's good to, you know, like I said, be together because, you know, that's where a lot of the bond and camaraderie kind of forms. So, yeah, we're looking forward to having you come down to some of these things. And hopefully you'll be able to make Imaginarium in September because I think you get to meet everybody pretty much there.
I will absolutely be there.
Awesome, awesome. So how do you feel? We just announced you today, but, you know, you kind of knew about this for a little bit, but, you know, we had the agreement.
No,
in place,
you know,
but
it was one of those things where you know, we kind of came to the agreement, and then today kind of really felt real. You know, it felt like today it was sort of, I was like, yes, this is really happening. Yeah. It was, you know, I've been a fan of Seven Star for a while. I've watched you guys get bigger and bigger, and but, you know, still do what you do, and I couldn't be happier.
Well, Susan, Mike, and Alex, we have a lobbyist now because he lives in Washington D.C., so he can go be our official lobbyist.
Right. I'm going to go push the Seven Star agenda on the Hill.
Right. A book in every household, at least one.
There's got to be some way we can get government money for something. I mean,
right. Well, hey, all the Federal Reserve does is print it out of thin air. Why not? You can just keep the printer
right,
going a little
right.
longer.
We should at least get something.
Yeah. I'm just a book. Yes, I'm only a book.
No, that would be fun. But that would be a whole new level for a small press, though, to actually have a Washington lobbyist, so it might be a cool angle to go on.
Yeah, I say we capitalize on it.
But you moved to Washington, right, not too terribly long ago, correct?
I did. We're from Connecticut originally. There's a lot of family there, and you know, we just kind of wanted to get out and move somewhere where there's a little more going on. So, you know, DC is a great fit.
Very cool. Well, let's jump into one thing and get everybody else discussing this with you. But one of the things I think is cool about Seven Star Press is each of the writers have their own facet. There's nobody that's like exactly like the other one. You know, they all have their own. Like last week, for example, our two releases, Awesome Jones by Ashley Rose Sullivan. It's a superhero fairy tale. Then we have Selah Janelle's new Old School, which is like a total cross-genre fairy tale folklore kind of contemporary thing that's really unique. And then with you, you know, you coming aboard, I mean, you're, you know, what we call dystopian noir. So let's start a little discussion with this and chime in, hosts, and let's talk about a little bit about, you know, your style and what you're coming from.
Sure. You know, I try to do dystopia, but, you know, it's not really, I guess the noir aspect comes in. It's, you know, it's not really like a Hunger Games or a lot of the other more pretty dystopians that are out right now. You know, dystopian novels aren't really meant to be pretty. And so mine takes on a sort of, you know, a darker, more gritty, realistic tone. It's not sort of set in a super future. It's more like, you know, 5 minutes ahead, 5 minutes tomorrow, things that might go wrong that are sort of, you know, already kind of brewing out there. And I try to take them some sort of, you know, I guess the worst possible outcome, and sort of present the world from that angle. You know, while incorporating some of those classic noir genre, I mean, it is genre fiction through and through. It has a lot of the, you know, classic genre, you know, touchstones in there. But I have no problem with that. I love it. You know, and I think it's time for dystopian fiction to kind of pull back. And look, I should be saying it's just like Hunger Games and I want a big fat Hollywood contract and all that, but unfortunately, you know, it's, yeah, or fortunately, I guess, depending on your point of view, it kind of pulls back a little bit to, you know, some of William Gibson's early work where there was, you know, it was not a pretty future. And even if it was dark, now it's dystopian stories tend to be, even if they're dark, they're still not dark. They're still kind of sexy. And, I'm just trying to bring this back to what I feel like dystopian novels were really meant to be.
Yeah, well, you've had a bit of some heavy hitters that have been pretty kind to you, and I guess even on a mentor kind of vibe. For instance, Jack O'Connell, who
yes.
was the author of Box 9, Resurrectionist. Talk about that you get. That's a really cool thing.
I cannot say enough good things about Jack. If you haven't read Jack's stuff, go on Amazon now and get it. The man is criminally underrated. I think he's one of the best noir writers of the last 20 years. And it's just, the fact, he's been in the game for a while, and he has rubbed elbows and written with some real luminaries. For some reason, he hasn't gotten the attention that he deserves, probably because he's a pretty laid-back, reserved dude, and he isn't out there flogging his stuff. Jack, go flog your stuff. But anyway, he wound up being my... He's my creative writing professor, teacher in undergrad, and I was kind of I wasn't as committed to the craft as I should have been, but he saw I had some talent and basically sat me down and kicked my ass and let me know that if I really wanted to be a writer, when you sort of first start writing, you're kind of at least in my case, I was kind of young and. I loved reading and I loved writing, and I thought that writing fiction was just a matter of, sitting down and letting it flow, and there it goes. Jack sat me down and was like, look, it's a job like any other job. You wake up, you bring your toolbox, you sit down, and you get to it, and some days it will be hard as hell, and you just gotta, do it and work through it. And that was some of the best advice I ever got, and Jack was kind of the first guy who saw that I had some kind of ability and helped me understand that just simply having ability wasn't enough, that you really had to bring that toolbox every day, like it's any other job.
Awesome, man. I mean, yeah, that's one of the cool things that, about your process that I think, you've also faced some tough stuff, which we'll get into in a second, but I wanted to just inform you that that's your editor on Tiber City Novels with us, Rodney Carlstrom, who I say, Carlstrom, you're so cool. I can't stand it, but he's out there. He is out there. He's in the chat room and he's listening to the show. So if you have anything you want to...
I already have such a man crush on a Rodney that it is not even funny.
Oh, God. Imaginarium takes on a whole new twist now. All right.
Although he just saw Blade Runner for the first time, I think, last week. I was mildly disturbed
really?
By that.
No. That's stunning. That's actually shocking.
I know.
Michael, chime in. You know Rodney.
I have Blade Runner in like 15 different formats, and if I would have known,
right.
I would have sat him down and shown it to him at some point. That's criminal to not have seen Blade Runner at this point.
In fairness, though, since he can't talk, he is shouting out in the chat room that he loves the book. So we'll give him a few points.
Well, I got to tell you, though, it's funny. We're talking about different formats of Blade Runner. And for Christmas one year, my wife got me the Blade Runner. It's like a suitcase, and it has eight different – and she's come to hate the thing so much because, anytime that we move, we have to sort of, pull up this Blade Runner suitcase, like lug it around, and now the kids are always, stealing it, and it's pretty heavy, so they kind of wield it like a weapon, and it's just turned into this great point of contention in my house, which was not meant to be. So,
well, you and Michael get along famously on the movie, cool movie box sets and memorabilia front. I can tell you that much. Michael's been known to buy a thing or two at these conventions, video-wise.
Well, I had to listen to my about every 5 minutes. I get a text from my wife over this weekend because I made the mistake of checking and finding out that our tax return was in the bank the day that I left for the convention.
Mm.
So she was texting me about every 5 minutes, "You're not spending any money, are you?" I said, no. Not any more than we have.
Yeah. I've kind of taken to the, you know, with the place that we're living now has it kind of like if a package gets delivered, everybody knows sort of instantly. And so I've had to kind of like race to the front door and like, you know, scoop up whatever stupid thing I've ordered, and hide it before my wife comes down. It's like, what did you order to our house now, you know? It's usually, you know, some old beat up record that nobody wants. And she's like, another record for our house?
I just tell her it's more books. Oh, I just got in some more books. Just some more books.
Right, exactly.
See, with me, that excuse wouldn't work because I'm to the point now where whenever I order something, it's either a movie or a book, and I'm always hearing, really, don't you have enough already? You have about over 1,000 DVDs, over a few hundred books. Do you really need another one? I'm like, yes, I do. I do. It's called addiction.
She made a point of showing me this article that she read in the newspaper that said that Blu-rays were one of the technologies that will be obsolete in 5 years. And you know, my counter to that was, well, yeah, but it's not 5 years from now yet, you know. So that just means I got 5 more years to buy Blu-rays.
Hey, I still buy new vinyl all the time. So...
You know, my son has actually gotten me back into vinyl. It's like I had a huge vinyl collection, which I still do. It's boxed up, but he's gotten into because a lot of the bands now will have the collectible vinyl. But if you get the collectible vinyl, you also get the digital download. So it's like the best of both worlds. You know, you get the nice, really cool vinyl with like some. You know, there's one that we had that. Has like blood streaks going, like it looks like somebody dropped blood on it while it was spinning, kind of a thing, you know, almost. And it's pressed into the vinyl. It's really, really sharp. And a lot of the composers last weekend at Horror Hound had a lot of their stuff out on vinyl that was really cool.
Well, I just got Slayer's Rain and Blood and Judas Priest British Steel on nice 180-gram brand new vinyl. And boy, I tell you, nothing sounds better. Nothing sounds better.
Oh, yeah. Well, yeah, like I love that all these, you know, all these bands are getting creative and finding new ways to, you know, to package their art as things get tougher. There's this article today. I don't know if you guys saw it. Wu-Tang Clan is going to be putting out one copy of their next album, right? And they're going to bring it around to museums around the world and have like exhibits, and listeners can come up one by one and listen to it. And after the whole process is finished, they will then sell it to the highest bidder, and it's his copy to do with whatever, you know, whatever he wants.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's pretty cool.
I mean, I don't know who's going to go to a museum and listen to the new Wu-Tang, but, I mean, still, it's still, you know, I like that people are trying to find new ways to reach their audiences.
Well, you could do that. You can write, like, a novella and then lock everybody in a room with no recording devices or anything and read it, and it'll be and do the same thing.
Yeah, I think that's torture. Isn't that prohibited by international law?
Oh, man. Oh, that's too much.
You know, as we're talking about specific vinyl records that'll have where you can do a download and still get, like, the downloadable version on your MP3 player or iPod or whatever, I'm noticing where that's happening quite a bit more, and I'm seeing where at cons you have authors who are tying in other little trinkets and things to their books. One thing that I've really noticed on Amazon is a lot of old-school horror movies that are getting a re-release on DVD. Some of them are having it where not only are you getting the DVD, but you're also getting the VHS of it as well. And so those are just, you know, neat little quirks that I'm starting to see pop up more and more, and I'd love to see it pop up more in the literary world.
That's something that, you know, that's always fascinating. Like, you know, I've always wanted to, like, you know, leave, like, USB thumb drives with, like, a bit of the book on it in a, like, restroom somewhere, you know, in some, like, club somewhere, and hope that, you know, somebody picks it up and then, you know, downloads the rest of the book or something. I mean, that's a pretty expensive way to do advertising, but, you know, just kind of,
you know,
cool stuff like that.
With you mentioning that, I had seen where one person, this was at a con like maybe a few years back, and he did steampunk riding. And what he would do is he would have where you could purchase like the jump drive that had his story downloaded on it already, so you could load it on your computer. But he had modified
right.
the jump drives where it had a steampunk twist to it.
That's very cool.
Very cool. Yeah. Yeah, of course, yeah, being indie authors, yeah, we got to come up with everything we can to make
yeah.
progress these days. Oh, man. Yeah, because, Anderson, you, yeah, you've had quite a road, too, and I don't know how much you want to talk about, but, yeah, you've been through the mill already, so as far as your road as an author.
Yeah, sure. You know, I'll try to talk about it without – I don't want to name – too many names, but yeah, it was great. Last year I signed with, you know, this sort of well-heeled New York agency for a representation, and, you know, it was, you know, come have lunch in New York and do the whole thing, and that was great. But as the process went on, and again, and I was like an indie author, self-published, stars in my eyes. It was just awesome, you know. And as things moved on, I started to realize there's a lot more involved in the publishing world than maybe the authors want to believe. And, you know, and I was working with an agent who was something of a junior agent, and he had you know, senior agents that he had to answer to. So there's like five lines of communication, and over a span of like 6 months, we're trying to work out edits to the book. And when I had initially signed, it was sort of this idea of, okay, you're 90% there. We love the manuscript. We're going to pull it that last 10% across the finish line. And that sounded great. That sounded, you know, exactly where I wanted to be, and that would set the stage for the next two books in the trilogy. But you know, every time that the edits went back, there was it was great, 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 but we need to see one more thing. And this went on for 6, 7, 8 months, and I started losing a lot of the momentum I had built up online. And, you know, eventually we just had to part ways because the communication was – and I mean, I don't consider myself, you know, difficult to work with or a diva. My wife might disagree entirely, but, you know, I was trying to be really easygoing about it. So I said, you know, I was like, look – you guys are the, you know, are the agents. You know what sells. I signed with you to sell, so I'm going to listen to what you've got to say. And at the end of the day, there was every single time the draft went back, there was more. You know, finally, after like, you know, over 6, 7, 8 months, we just had to part ways. So it's because I had always admired Seven Star, and I always, you know, said, yeah, that's the kind of agency, that's kind of press I'd want to be with. You know, they kind of respect the old school, but they're still pushing into the digital world. And so when I left my agency, I got in touch with Steven, and here we are.
That's awesome. Yeah. And, yeah, we're going to go real old school. We're going to release limited editions on hand done on parchment. That's the next step.
Yeah, we're going to go Gutenberg style.
We're going to go old school, even older school than Sailor's old school. Yeah.
Now, Anderson, I have a few questions about
sure.
why you chose to write noir and dystopian as something together. Was it something that you had always had a fandom for, or was this something that you had stumbled across later in life, or how did that all come about?
You know, it was really from the beginning. I was sort of drawn to, well, I mean, I've always loved dystopian works. Always, you know, he was a huge fan of William Gibson growing up, and it's funny, I kind of caught the second wave. I was too young when his first, you know, sort of game-changing works came out, so I sort of picked them up later, and I started reading those when I was pretty young. I didn't even realize what I was reading, or the full spectrum of what it was and what it meant. So as I got older and I started developing as a writer, you kind of go back to those touchstones that you have and you reread them and you kind of grow to appreciate them more and more. So I was always in love with the dystopian stuff, and you know, even seeing Blade Runner, things like that. You know, that for some reason it just clicked. And I don't know, you know, if that's kind of that's depressing. If I should be drawn to, you know, comedies or you know, like romantic comedies or something else, but that's what worked for me. And I think the noir aspect comes into play in that. I've always loved sort of the black hat, the anti-hero, the sort of, you know, born to lose type. You know, I didn't sort of do it intentionally, but when I sat down and sort of got serious about writing, I was like, you know, look, I'm going to draw on the environment and the themes that I love and the characters who inhabit those worlds are going to be the kind of characters who I love. Hope it works. You know, I wasn't, you know, intentionally trying to, you know, create some kind of subgenre, but, you know, reading back, it just kind of made sense that these characters would inhabit those kind of worlds. And that's, you know, that's just how I've gone. And it's funny because, you know, you walk that fine line. You don't want it to be too depressing. You want people to be able to relate to the characters, but you want to stay true to the genre. So, you know, it's always dicey. But you know, I mean, and some people hate it, but I don't. So I keep on writing it.
And see, that was something I was kind of curious about because I've been looking at your page on Goodreads, well, your profile for Goodreads, and I was noting that I was noticing that it said your influences was William Gibson, Stephen King, and I could definitely see the dystopian there because Stephen King, I would consider his Gunslinger series to be that.
Mm.
But yeah. And then I. And then I had seen where you also had other influences such as Bret Easton Ellis and Charlie mm-hmm. Houston, and of course you had already mentioned Jack O'Connell. And how does Bret Easton Ellis's work kind of influence your characters or what you've written?
Well, you know, that's a great question. Bret Easton Ellis, I think, is more, yeah, and I know that he's a controversial figure. I kind of credit him more with almost teaching me how to write.
Mm-hmm.
You know how kind of when you're sort of first learning how to write, you mimic a style. And for some reason, I just kind of picked up. I loved his – he has this way of being, you know, a minimalist while having unbelievably long sentences. And he does this great literary trick where I feel like he has the ability to kind of create momentum through the, you know, structures of his sentences. And it's I've always found that creating, you know, that feeling of action and movement on the page is one of the most important aspects of being a writer because there is no quicker way to kill your career or your story than by having it just die on the page, you know. And when I was a really young writer, I found, you know, the hardest part is to sort of get the story moving. And I found that Easton Ellis's writing style helped me make that happen. So aside from just liking his work in general, I found it was sort of useful to ape his style in the beginning because it taught me how to push the story forward with language. Which is mm-hmm. tough, you know. It's really tough to you know, to sort of do and not tell, you know. Don't show me, just make it happen. And I feel really fortunate that I happened to take his style to sort of ape in the beginning, you know, as I sort of gained my own confidence. And I just really, if you read his work, he has this crazy way of just pushing things forward with, you know. He dances right on that line of like run-on sentences and, you know, too many semicolons. And I have too many semicolons. Fury Kingdom, I'm sure Roddy's going to have a fit. There's semicolons and M-dashes and all kinds of shit in there. But I really think it kind of helps propel the book forward. It kind of keeps that breakneck, you know, things are about to fall apart, center can't hold, you know, feeling going. So, you know, Brett, thank you.
Oh, I'm
yeah,
glad
that, see, it's like when you had that in your listing, the first thing that I think of when I hear about that author is, of course, American Psycho. And
sure.
I'm like,
sure.
Well, is this what I should be expecting with your work? Or
Right. There are no rats and orifices in my novel, I promise.
Yeah, well, even if it was, I'd still read it. I'm just like, what?
I appreciate that.
Hey, Alex, before your next question, I just want to note that there was a response from Carlstrom in the chat room when Anderson mentioned all of the M dashes and semicolons and stuff. He typed maniacal laughter from the chat room. So I think he's ready. Back to you, Alex.
Well, pretty much with your book, I was noticing that it does have some very amazing reviews on Amazon, and I am assuming that this is going to be the first of a series, correct?
Yes, sir.
All right. How many books do you plan on giving us regarding this this subject?
Right now, I'm envisioning it as a trilogy.
Okay.
I'm at work on the second one right now. You know, but that might change. You know, characters have a tendency to take on a life of their own. You can't always control them. I'd like it to be a trilogy because, you know, I feel like once you drag it out to 6, 7, people start getting, you know, a little tired of it. But I'm fine with 3. That's what I'm shooting for, unless my characters have a change of heart.
Okay. Well, you know, there's nothing wrong with having books 4, 5, and 6. I know there was a time where a lot of authors felt like trilogies, it was a beginning, middle, and end. And now we're kind of more so in the mindset of you see it a lot in teen fiction where there's a book 4 or book 5 and
mm-hmm.
it simply just
True.
Ends there. And so it is something that's becoming quite a bit more frequent in today's society. And even if, you know, it makes it into Hollywood, and even if you just did have a trilogy, I could imagine them saying, all right, well, we're going to break the last movie down into 2 movies. So, you know.
If they want to pay me for it, they are more than welcome to break it down into however many pieces that they want. No, but, you know, I say 3 because really what I would love to do is after, you know, I finish telling this story about, you know, Dylan Fitzgerald and Megan Morrison. Once that's done, I like to almost sort of shift focus and keep the story in Tiber City, but move on to some other characters who I've maybe touched on and tell their story, or you know even tell the you know origins of this you know great broken city. I feel like there's so many different opportunities that I don't want to have to sort of stay with the same group of characters. I want them to be able to tell their story. And then, you know, ultimately at the end of the day, it is the city's story. I feel like to sort of get to that, I need to move beyond the first set of characters that I've introduced, you know, to tell their story and then, kind of weave that into the next batch. So.
Now, since you had mentioned that you're shining so much light on the city itself, I know that a lot of authors, such as Stephen King being one of them, they'll use places that are fictitious, such as Derry, and it'll actually be the fictitious name for the place where he grew up and so on and so forth. The city that you write about, was there an actual city or place that inspired you to write about this town, of this area?
Yes. It's a sort of interesting, there's not just one, and I guess it's a couple that in my mind kind of come together to sort of create this monstrosity. There is in Gibson's early novels, he has something called the Sprawl, which is this giant metro area from Boston to Atlanta, which sort of runs the length of the Eastern Seaboard. And I always loved that idea, you know. So that was kind of the starting point. Jack O'Connell has a city called Quinsigamon, which is, you know, absolute horror show. So, you know, broken down factories, post-industrial future, and that definitely fed into it a little bit. And then I guess New York would be the real world equivalent. You know, but again, it could be, it's just any massive metropolis on the East Coast of America. And I sort of play into the, you know, typical idea of in America, our major cities are on the East Coast, and, you know, you move west into sort of into the wilds, that sort of very old idea of, you know, pushing west. And, you know, when you move west, you sort of head into the desert, and things get a little weird. So I kind of tried to stay true to that classic American archetype there.
Well, what a good segue. You mentioned things getting a little weird, and I said something about a surprise a little bit earlier. So, but first, we have to have the command that allows this thing to happen, so everybody listen real carefully.
Release the Kraken!
That's right. It's time to release the Kraken, folks. Coming to you all the way live from Alaska. The one, the only, Chris Morton, the cabin goddess on the Star Chamber Show. You're live, Chris.
She lives.
Hi, Anderson. Yes, I'm crawling my way out from underneath the snow. Hi.
Hey, Chris.
Hey, and today's the day. I mean, do you know how hard it is for me to keep my mouth shut for a month? I just take the cabin goddess stamp. Oh, I'm kidding. Well, not really. I have to keep it
Let me go on a record saying that cabin goddess Chris Morton is one of my top five favorite people in the whole world. So.
Oh yeah, there's a reason she's here, folks. It's not just out of the blue.
Well, I am one of, there's two people here that I'm talking to you right now that are two of my favorite people in the whole world. And I've been talking to Anderson up to Seventh Star Press for a while, and I'm really thrilled to death that you decided, well, you both decided to come together and make this magic happen, because I truly believe this series is one of the series that's really going to go places. So, yay!
Chris has been so instrumental in, you know, helping me sort of focus the online efforts to get the word out about King. Chris is just absolutely incredible. She is, she has the coolest ideas for promotion. She's like on the cutting edge of, you know, ways to reach new readerships. I mean, I honestly can't say enough about her. And I'm actually begging her to be my agent. She's not an agent yet, but I was like, I'm trying to convince her to become an agent. Just be my agent.
We could call I could be a hybrid agent. I just don't think that I have the qualifications. I have the passion. I believe
in
the product. You know?
But if I had to negotiate a deal, a better deal with Steven, who else would I want in my corner but Cabin God?
Oh, that's true.
She was in your corner. Trust me. There were discussions.
Give me a couple glasses of wine and the person's phone number, and I guarantee I'll get you a publisher. Right, Steven?
See? See? That, you know, what else do you need from agent, really?
Oh, my
because
God. Well, everybody
ahead,
here can...
Go ahead and tell them, Steven. And from your point of view, that evening that I called you...
Oh, my God, the midnight call. Well, God, it could have been 2 or 3 in the morning. I don't know. But, yeah, it was Cabin Goddess in her, all her glory. And it was, we had one heck of a call. And then that's kind of when I found out that Anderson was, you know, looking our way. So I was like, oh, that's awesome.
Well, this is what happened. This is when somebody's like, you know, and I'm all you creative people, including you, Anderson, you have to pick your own time to write, as you've been telling people and as you've told people, you know, throughout the last couple of years, especially with the new baby, with the toddler,
and, you know, moving to Washington, D.C. area, and then, you know, all the things that you've been doing the last couple of years, finding time to do anything creative. And so, and when you do, you're in the zone. And when you're in the zone, you don't look at the clock. And Stephen knows this, so he's not swearing at me at calling for calling. Plus, he's always awake at midnight.
I don't like you if you're not up past midnight, you know.
And which is great. Oh. For, it's great for anybody that's on the East Coast that's one of my clients, because I'm usually up at their midnight still. I'm usually up still when they get up again at 8 o'clock in the morning. So it's all usually
yeah, yeah. That always freaked me out.
Yeah.
Yeah, Chris once did a... Chris once did an interview with me at like 6 in the morning.
Yes.
Wow.
Yeah, I mean,
yes, I
we're up, you know, well past midnight my time talking about, you know, like what kind of different, you know, porn genres we can like branch out into to make extra money. That those are the kind of conversations that happen after midnight.
Hey, yeah, after midnight is if the Bigfoot porn girl can make
Bigfoot
some money,
porn, right. How do we top Bigfoot porn?
How do we talk Bigfoot? Hey, extra money is extra money. But my thing is you're talking about innovative things, and this is one of the things that Seven Star Press is, which is why I thought you were perfect for Seven Star Press, is that they're always looking for creative and different ways to be stand out in the book industry. And I do the same thing, because there's thousands of books in this world that are dystopian and, you know, whatever, punk. In fact, I have a friend writing me Bacon Punk. I can't wait for the short story to come out. But, I mean, whatever punk you have on there. And to stand out, you have to have something unique. Well, even if you have something unique, you have to make it unique. And I'm done with you, Anderson. I just had to take a break. I had to take my month-long break.
I completely understand.
I lost my shit. And I'm going to say this on the air, Goodreads is evil. That's all. There's no explanation needed. None. And I took a break. And I didn't mean to crap out on anybody, but I took a break. But what happened was talked about what the book's about, but there's conspiracy theories. There's secret organizations. There's political, you know, I mean, anything that, you know, dystopian, it's going to have tons of conflicts. Well, what's the best thing to do with conflicts? Take advantage of them and create things. We've got new websites coming. There's Twitters that are involved. We're creating, you know, to make sure that there's portals for his political for the political campaigns and for the monks and for the, you know, it's going to be exciting, I think. And I'm unmuted. What?
No, it did some kind of thing. You're back.
Oh, I was muted?
No, you're back.
Stephen censored you.
You censored
me? You're not. No, I didn't.
Oh, you bastard. No confusion. I'm so simple. I, like, came back from, you know when you're on vacation mode? You're not in the zone. I've been writing blog posts for the last 4 days so I can stay on top of things. Anyway, I'm so excited. I can't wait for you to pick your cover artist. I can't wait to see what happens. And
I'm trying to convince Chris to go. I want to fly her out to the East Coast and send her into different subways up and down from, like, Boston to, like, D.C. and have her spray paint the symbol of one of the renegade monk groups. From Kingdom,
you know,
in every major subway in the U.S. That would be fantastic.
I do it.
Hopefully, Chris will be making an Imaginarium. That would be awesome.
And slap
I'm on
a little,
retainer.
You know,
I'm on retainer. I have a lawyer on retainer, so I could probably be okay if I did that and got busted.
There you go. See? It's performance art. It's not.
I would have to. I'd have to grab some. I know so many people in so many states. I just grab every time I went someplace. I could have a backup and have somebody watching my back. I'd still do that. I'd have to like create it like a disguise and just kind of, you know, there's a whole thing. There's a whole. They've had TVs and movies about guys doing that to create a viral program, and I tried to do that with the net. We actually did. We did do that. That really cool postcard I made with the marching baby dolls. speed elf.
Oh, yeah, yeah, right, right, exactly.
That kind of went viral on Pinterest.
Dude, it,
that
it,
creepy.
The sales reflected that. It was a,
yeah,
it was a phenomenal idea. It was great, and you know, that's what indie authors, you know, I guess, I mean, I don't know. I guess I'm still an indie author. I'm no longer self-published. I guess, which I love. I love that I can still be you know, indie, but kind of be able to shed that self-published thing.
Yeah, you're still an indie author. I mean, with
yeah.
Seventh Star Press, unique, independent, traditional publishing company. But you guys have, even though you operate somewhat traditionally, I would technically call you more of the new hybrid, because you guys are standalone. I mean, not most hosting companies don't have the custom or, you know, the limited edition hardbacks with all the artwork and stuff like that. And Seventh Star Press goes above and beyond. And because Stephen and so many of the people involved in Seventh Star Press are focused on things like their fan base and, you know, conventions and things like that, because you run the gambit as authors and publishers and fans alone, you guys are focused on the corner of the market, which is really important, is creating that, you know, that cult-like following, which is why I, again, think and was right that Kingdom and the Tribe is going to fit right in with the cult. I mean, there's just certain types of books that fit with Seventh Star Press, so I knew you were a perfect fit. I'm just good like
oh, yeah.
that.
And don't forget, when you're on the East Coast making your run, Susan lives in that sector, so she can help you with getaway, like hideaway places.
There,
there
go.
We go.
Yeah.
There we go.
Hey, I live in the middle of nowhere. I have a great place to hide.
Okay. Do you have a large area to bury bodies just in case I have to take people out?
I don't just have a large yard. I have a large yard with a lot of trees and a cow pasture behind it, so we're good.
There we go. See, we're covered. Just in case, you know, I'm not saying that I would ever do anything like that.
Do you have
and
pigs?
No
you can always feed,
no
can always feed the body
have...
to the pigs. That's a very important thing.
Well, you wonder why I have such good bacon.
Well, there was
my pigs are really healthy.
Oh man!
Oh, poor Jeff.
And those raspberry trees or those raspberry bushes that look almost like trees out in the backyard, they're kind of going rows, like, you know, 6 to 7 foot long rows, about 3 feet wide. There's no reason why they're healthier than the rest of them. None whatsoever.
Feeding dead bodies to pigs. That's what this conversation has come down to.
Wow. The cabin goddess of East Coast Rampage. This is going to be awesome.
It just goes to show that I will do almost anything for my authors.
Boom. There you go. That's my agent, people. That's my agent. Chris Martin.
Oh, my God. This is great.
Chris
Are you
Martin
surprised, Anderson?
No, not at all.
Got a one-star review.
I figured she'd be lurking out here somewhere.
Yeah, here we go. Did that person give you a one-star review that you really didn't deserve? Chris has got a couple of pigs she can feed him to. Sorry.
You have to pull out the teeth first, and then you're good to go.
Yeah, I got to make
sure. Susan, Alex, and Michael, put in your requests right now.
Who do you want Chris to feed to her hungry hogs?
Well, am I only limited at one person? Can I give multiple?
I do have to say that I shouldn't have said that about reviewers. I will go on the record right now that that's not really fair. Every review has its merit, even if it's as an example of how not to write a review.
Yes. There.
I actually like when I get a one-star review, because then, you know, there's so many bullshit artists out there who have, like, 600 5-stars, and that's it.
Oh, my God.
God, we vent about that all the time on the show.
Yeah.
You know, at least, like, a few shitty one-stars means that I'm legit, right? I mean,
Well actually, that's what I told Alex when he had one. I told him, I said, don't be upset. I said, believe me. I said, that shows that your reviews that are coming in are from real readers, and it's not just a, you know, stack the deck sort of thing. So
right.
It's not bad to have a few bad reviews.
No, I mean, it shows that you aren't just having your book reviewed by reviewers, but readers are reviewing your book. And that's two different types of reviews. There are reviewer reviews mm-hmm. and reader reviews. And I don't read 5-star reviews. I write them, but I don't read them. I read 3 stars, 2 stars, and 1 stars. I'm smart. I can read, can tell when a review is just from somebody being an asshole. I can also, I bought a book based on a 1-star review. I bought a trilogy based on that 1-star review. I read that 1-star review about Virulent, which is a YA post-apocalyptic dystopian type of book. And it was YA, first of all. And, Stephen, you know how I feel about YA. And second
uh-huh.
of all,
yeah.
it was a very hardcore, mean 1-star review. But she had lots of awesome points, and everything she hated about it is exactly what I loved about post-apocalyptic, and you know, and so I bought the series, and I can say that's just one example. So authors don't ever be upset about your 1 stars. Just like Stephen said, it means that you actually have real people reading your book and not a bunch of kiss ass, you know, fangirls.
Yeah, and this is very true, and sometimes with the 1-star reviews, like how I have received before, it's where you have a reader going into a book thinking it's going to be this, but when they read it, it's actually something completely different, and they don't even consider, oh, well, you know, for example, with Southern Haunts, I received a review that was a negative review, and it said I was expecting these stories to be 100% true. And it says on the book, the book itself, you know, they are inspired by true events. They are fictionalized. I'm like, yeah, they just didn't read before they bought it.
Yeah, Michael got hit with somebody. Michael got hit with somebody in Poseidon, I think, that thought they were upset because it wasn't just about the Greek god Poseidon or something like that.
I had somebody that was upset about that, and I had another person who was just totally outraged that there was sex in the book.
That's right.
I love when that happens when someone's like, there is too, you know, there's too much gratuitous drug use and sex. I'm like, great, please say that, you know, 10 more times.
Yeah.
Because there's a lot more people who want to see the sex.
No kitty. Oh, I love it. One of the reasons why the series and you know what? The teenagers just whined and bitched and moaned and complained and woe is me. I'm like, oh, then she actually wrote about a real teenager. You know, this is my big complaint about YA books. These teenagers are perfect. Since when have you ever known a teenager? Oh, give me a break. You know, so that's another reason why it fooled me. I love that. I read one on Michael West on the Vampires Don't Sparkle that was complaining about, I can't even remember what was it? Oh, gratuitous violence. And I'm like, you bought a scary looking covered, you know, book with a scary looking cover that specifically says vampires don't sparkle, and you didn't get a clue from that before even reading the subtitle.
And here's the thing, as fantastic as what that book is, the cover itself spells it out, that this is a creature that is going to rip you to shreds. There is no romance.
Right.
If common sense doesn't kick in then you probably don't deserve to be reading to start with.
Well, no. I'll never be an elitist like that, and I never will approve with any kind of elitist comment like that. No offense, but we should say that publicly. We can think it, but we shouldn't say that publicly. What we should be doing is be happy that they bought the book, one, two, mm-hmm. that we're not the only ones that can recognize what idiots they are. And three, it's humor. I mean, truthfully, every single review is valid in its own way, whether it's an example of good or bad. I don't want to diss any kind of reviews. I know how y'all feel. And I feel the same way when I read some of those going, God, hello, go back to watching soap operas, please.
Chris, oh, just got to warn everybody, we're under a minute. Next week is Linda De Leon from Southern Haunts. But Anderson, quickly, give a quick way to find you online, sir. And thank you for being on the show in advance.
Guys, thank you so much for having me. It was an absolute pleasure. If you want to check out any more of Kingdom before it comes out in its sexy new 7-Star Press edition, you can find me at TiberCityNoir.com.
And it's coming.
Awesome.
And the new website's coming. It's going to be looking. It's going to look spectacular with the new cover and the new edition. The website will be relaunched. Both Kai and I from the Finishing Fairies are working on that. Just wanted to say that.
And Stephen, thank you so much for giving me a chance to become part of the 7-Star family. I appreciate it, and we're gonna have a great time, man. Good stuff.
Thanks a lot, man. Thanks for being on the show, and good night, everybody. Unfortunately, the clock ran out. Good night, everybody.
Thanks for having me.
Good night, everybody. Good night.
Good night.